in Western countries, there was a certain reduction of the importance of the father. I think there is a confusion here between the importance of the father, or at least a father function or a father principle, with the authoritarian father, the patriarchal father, that figure that arouses so much suspicion and reactions against.
Welcome to the IPA podcast. For those of you who have been listeners to the past 40 episodes of this podcast series, you know that we've been focusing on analysts who bring their clinical skills to venues outside of the consulting room, hence the name psychoanalysis on and off the couch. Given that we are all facing together a crisis of unfathomable proportions, we're going to be changing the focus of our podcast. We are going to be interviewing psychoanalysts from all corners of the globe to discuss with them how their local communities are coping with this situation, how their clinical work has been affected by this situation, and also how the internal worlds of both the analyst and the patient have been impacted by this virus, as it impacts both our real fears and our imaginary fears. We're going to encounter not only uncertainty and fear, but we're also going to learn great wisdom, gifted empathy, and hope. We'll be maintaining the title of this podcast, both as a testament to our past work and as a placeholder for our future work. I hope you find these conversations both informative and sustaining. Feel free to write comments on our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org. Thank you. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Harvey Schwartz, and my guest today is Dr. Claudio Lax Azarek. Dr. Azarek is a training and supervising analyst at the Porto Alegre Psychoanalytic Society in Brazil. He is a professor emeritus of psychiatry at the Federal University of Rio Grande do Sul, former president of the IPA, and a recipient of the Sigourney Award in 2011. Currently, he is a chair of the IPA International New Groups Committee. His last book with Giovanni Foresti is entitled Psychoanalysis and Psychiatry, Partners and Competitors in the Mental Health Field. His main areas of interest: psychoanalytic training and practice, the process of aging, and the relation of psychoanalysis and culture. And we discussed that last interest of his at some length, the relationship between what he calls the fathering function, as it exists in all of our minds and in our development and then in our analyses, and also the presence of that fathering function as it exists in the political sphere, both in our national politics and in the capacities of our leaders. He's deeply immersed both in the individual intrapsychic analytic state of mind and also how it lives in the political dimension. And you might listen to the man as he describes these abilities, because he really evidences a life built upon the capacity that he calls the fathering function. It was a real pleasure for me to get to know him, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Claudio, welcome to the podcast. It's so nice to have you with us.
My pleasure.
Claudio, in your 2015 paper in the Psychoanalytic Quarterly, you describe what you call the fathering function. And what you describe as fathering function is the early introduction into the mother-infant dyad of a third, of this father third, that separates the mother and infant. And in the process of separating that intense dyad, it helps create the capacity for the infant and then toddler to develop age-appropriate inhibitions. And by age-appropriate inhibitions, what we mean is the inhibition to be able to think and not always act, the not being subject to impulsiveness, to be able to consider things from multiple points of view, maybe even to be future-oriented. All those capacities you describe are built on that early fathering function. That's one version of masculinity that you talk about. And the other version is the familiar one, the paternalistic authoritarianism that's defined through violence and submission and dominance. And both of those qualities of masculinity exist in all of us. Both of those fantasies of paternity exist in both of us. And as you point out, they emerge in analyses. And you also have found and feel that it emerges in the political realm as well. And we're going to talk about both of those. Before we get to that, though, I'd like to check in with you. We hear all kinds of things about the both health of your country and the political health of your country, Brazil. Tell us about both briefly, if you would.
Yes. First of all, thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be talking with you and in this important activity of the IPA that you are doing. Well, the situation of the coronavirus in Brazil is that since we are a continental country, we have different realities in different places of the country. So far, we have 526,000 cases and 3,000 deaths. But this has a very different presentation. For instance, Rio, São Paulo, and the Northeast are the places with more cases and losses. In my own state, in the south of Brazil, we have only 10,000 cases and 245 deaths. And one of the problems we are facing here is the fact that in some places, for instance, in our state, the social isolation began very early, which is possibly responsible for this smaller amount of cases. And at the same time, when the pandemic began in Brazil, we have a very well-structured health ministry and a very a doctor, very experienced and a very good team, coordinating all actions. Unfortunately, due to political reasons, he was fired by the president. And from then on, the situation is more close to a chaotic one, since each state, each governor, each city, each mayor are having to deal with the situation. So the states are doing the job. The federal government is more involved in several political conflicts. And there is not a overall coordination. This is more or less the overall situation. I don't know whether you are also including here the reaction of the psychoanalytic community.
Yes, very much so. How have they responded to both crises, the health and the political one?
Well, this is something really amazing because immediately all psychoanalytic societies organized a sort of clinical availability by phone or by other means, by other ways, to not only people affected by coronavirus, but also to medical teams. So psychoanalysts are part of a regional and national network of psychiatry, psychology, and other mental health workers trying to give psychological support, brief interventions, And this is a very important way of helping our health teams. We have really very good doctors, nurses, and other professionals working in the hospitals, and they are very, they feel very supported by psychoanalytic and psychological societies. And at the same time, psychoanalytic societies and the Brazilian Federation is very active in the public arena, contributing with texts, interventions, suggestions in order to express our position in favor of following the World Health Organization orientation and the first health minister, in such a way that psychoanalysis is seen as a living force in Brazilian current scene. Recently, there was a very wild manifesto from the main intellectuals, scientists, and other professionals insisting in the importance of preserving good health assistance, and a great number of psychoanalysts signed it. Hmm. And this is interesting to note, because previously there was this prevailing attitude of confounding the necessary neutrality that we must keep in the analytic room with a wider neutrality in the public scene. So these are the main facts that I can tell you to begin with.
I'm tempted to go down this road with you, because there's so much that you said that interests me, and I'm sure would interest our audience. But let me change our direction a little bit. I gave a very quick and imprecise description of this fathering function that you write about. Help us out a little bit. Flesh it out for us and tell us how you see it lives both in the office and also how it may apply politically.
Well, let's begin with Freud, as usual. In The Ego and the Id, Freud wrote that an individual's first and most important identification is his identification with the father in his own personal prehistory. This is apparently not, in the first instance, the consequence or outcome of an object catexis. It is a direct and immediate identification and takes place earlier than any object catexis. In putting things this way, Freud made it clear that the father, as a principle or function, is an unconscious presence prior to object relatedness. The father with whom we originally identify is not, therefore, the historical father. This is what Freud means when he said that the identification is part of our personal prehistory. And this structural approach shaped the sensibility of many European analysts. For instance, Green said about the primal sin that it is part of the structure of being human, even if it is never personally witnessed. Similarly to what Green said in this paper, I suggested that the father is not only an historical Oedipal father, the object of desire, or a figure arousing destructive rivalry, but rather a psychic formation characterized by his third-party role as a separator of mother and child, and should be understood as a father principle. And my colleague Marília Eisenstein noted the connection between the father principle and primal identification, and she agrees with this. She writes that the father as function or principle can be separated from the person of the biological father in flesh and blood. And of course, this point of view has implications both for our developmental theory and for our understanding of the psychoanalytic situation. In my paper, I noted also that the role of the father has been neglected by psychoanalysis in the emphasis on the relationship between mother and baby. I would go further in, and I would say that psychoanalysis was first very interested with the father. But then, when the arrival of the Kleinian analysts, the mother was also considered very important. And then, with further developments, the dyad, mother and baby, took the main role. And now, it seems to me that in Western countries, there was a certain reduction of the importance of the father. I think there is a confusion here between the importance of the father, or at least a father function or a father principle, with the authoritarian father, the patriarchal father, that figure that arouses so much suspicion and reactions against. So I think that when we are talking about the analytic field, and this is a concept produced in Latin America by Barringer and Barringer, we are considering a situation in which there is an unavoidable asymmetry. And the one who keeps this asymmetry is naturally the analyst. So I would say that there is here an expression of the father principle or the father function. And this is important also to consider that in many cases where there is no father or there is no historical father, that this presence, this structuring presence of a father principle or a father function still exists in the mind of the patient. And this will be something that we will have to work through with him.
It sounds very similar to what Peter Blow Sr. has written about. He called it the dyadic phallic phase, the pre-Oedipal phase.
Exactly.
And
you are right.
And it's important, different language, but I think describing a similar phenomena. How do you see this playing out in the larger political realm? That is, the confusion, the conflation of the authoritative father and the underlying father principle, which is so essential.
Yes, this is a very important point. There is a very beautiful paper from Winnicott on the meaning of the word democracy, in which he describes that in a democratic system, the voters elect someone, and they give to this person a parent role, the president, the governor, the prime minister, and so on, has the task and the obligation to behave as an inspirational father, as or a mother also. Someone who will give the example, who will lead in times of war. It's for me, it's impossible not to remember what happened in Great Britain.
I was thinking just the same
when,
thing.
When Churchill behaved exactly in this strong and inspirational role. Unfortunately, what we are seeing today in many countries, for instance, the United States, Brazil, and other countries, is the presence of leaders who do not understand or are unable to perform this role. And instead of that, they take an authoritarian stance. They behave sometimes as kings, dictators, they see themselves as chiefs and not as presidents who must inspire, lead, show empathy, show compassion, be together with their peoples. And unfortunately, this is something that psychoanalysis helps us to understand, but it's difficult to change because this has to do with all political systems, corruptions, historical factors, and so on. Recently, I was reading a paper in the New York Times describing how former American presidents behaved in situations of crisis. For instance, Lincoln, Obama, or
Roosevelt,
a former president, Reagan. The way they reacted when the country was threatened. And this is the sort of thing we are missing currently.
Let me return us to the clinical setting. I'm drawn to what you're painting and would like to go there with you. I guess we're going to end up going back and forth between the dyad of the analytic situation and the broader one, but as you point out, they both speak similar languages. Can you give us an example of how this father functioning lives in the clinical setting? And with that, let me ask you, we haven't made the distinction between male and female, how it lives in the minds of daughters and sons.
I think that in the minds of daughters and sons, they play a different role considering what we can think about the Oedipal complex, because it's impossible, the absence of a father function or a father principle in both men and women. But in my view, the father function will be present more or less following the lines of the Oedipal complex, as was described in girls and in boys. But anyway, it will be present there. It is something that was there before, as Freud described, and several French authors. And this will appear in the analytic situation.
You mentioned earlier about the presence or absence of the physical, actual father, and how that's not determinative of this state of mind. One way I have found it useful to think of, as others have, is even in the absence of the presence of the actual father, the paternal introject in the mind of the mother, if that lives and is vibrant and is fundamentally affectionate, that will provide that same thirdness for her children, male and female, even without the presence of the actual father.
Yes, you are right. It's present in the mind of the mother, but in this description I am presenting here, it is also present in the mind of the son or the daughter, not only through the narrative offered by the mother, which is important, but also as something pre-existent, a natural structure, something that naturally is part of the human mind.
Hmm. Can you share with us some disguised clinical material that will give us a real immediate feel?
Yes, I was thinking about a male patient around his 40s. And this patient was a very successful professional. But one of his main complaints since the beginning of his analysis was precisely that his father had died when he was 1 year old. And the mother took care of him and his siblings and did not marry again. So, throughout his development, something interesting happened, that he followed the same profession of his father, at the same time describing his development as a fatherless one. The mother was present, very present, and as you said, she told stories about the father, but there was something in him that gave me, in the counter-transference, the ambiguous feeling of a presence and an absence. He was distant. He was in a permanent state of defense. And in the transference, there was a continuous attempt to keep a distant relationship with me. But at the same time, there was this ambiguity that, from my point of view, I began to develop a positive counter-transference, a sort of a loving relation, a father relation. So it was first present in my mind. I felt as if I should occupy the empty space of the father. And slowly, we realized it jointly, that all his life was a search for the missing father, despite the fact that something in his mind told him there was a figure, there was someone who was this father. And slowly, there was a very strong shift in the transference relationship, in such a way that he was enacting with me a father relationship, and I was jointly with him giving life to this missing father. The father was there, the father was not there, but at the same time, there was an identification, primary identification, which was relieved throughout his development. And then it was as if both of us, we were building together something that was absent, something that was primary present, and the consequence was that this single man then was able to marry and to become a father himself. In his reports, it was very moving, because once he told me, listen, now I know what it means to be a father. Now I can have a child of my own. And this was something he learned throughout his analysis. I don't know whether it was possible to show that there was something previous that slowly
that's the question, isn't it?
Emerged. Yeah. And there is a very important point that these French authors like Delormel stresses. In these very difficult cases, the analyst should not lose hope. Without some hope that we will find something jointly with the patient, we must conclude that this is impossible. And the hope of finding a father after this long search, when it is fulfilled, is a very rewarding experience.
Reminds me of Lowell's comment that we need to keep in our mind our image of who the patient can be, not just who they feel themselves to be at the moment. And you pictured him as a loving father, and you helped him find that through his sense of your loving him.
Yes, really. It's true.
what I want to ask you is what it's like for you to be surviving and sustaining yourself at this time in your country. You've described your country in crisis from a virus and crisis from, as you say, a failing political system. What's life like for you now?
Well, this is a really, this is something we are discussing here in several webinars among us. Well, we are all at home. I am seeing all my patients online, mostly only by audio, but some with video. I'm supervising several analytic cases, and we are very active in these exchanges discussing the current situation. Considering the circumstances, mostly what we did was to remain at home when we are married with our spouses or when we are single alone. And it's an unusual experience to be doing all the tasks at home, at the same time seeing patients and trying to move forward with the analysis. I think that it's a very interesting and challenging experience. First of all, because not only we analysts, but our candidates and some patients who are also at home tell this experience of discovering parts of the house that we didn't notice prior. I think this is a reference to the fact that being under these circumstances, we are discovering areas of our own mind, areas of our own self that so far were hidden or that we didn't notice completely. So it's a period of discovery, self-discovery, and the discovery of the capacity of some patients to do analytic work jointly with us, some of them better than before. At the same time, as I told you before, we have to deal with this political situation, which keeps us very attentive to everything that's going on. We have a very active Brazilian Psychoanalytic Federation. We exchange papers, we exchange clinical experiences, and we give our views, and we are very strongly standing for democracy and for decent ways of facing the pandemic. So the institutes are working. They are keeping their seminars online. The candidates are doing their work, and things move ahead. It's not very agreeable to feel sometimes locked at home, but at the same time, as I said before, we are discovering books we hadn't read before, TV series or films we didn't see before. And another moving experience is that since all our children and grandchildren are also at their homes, the way of communicating increased dramatically. So we speak with each other almost daily. We exchange videos. And so there is a feeling of family. There is a feeling of community. And there is a feeling of communion with the country and its people. And I think that not only me, but several other colleagues mentioned it in these webinars, that not only our patients should feel grateful to us because we keep analyzing them, but we also feel grateful to them because they allow us to become and continue to be analysts in a different way.
Sure.
So I am hopeful that this situation will come to an end someday. I'm really very sorry to listen for what is happening in many countries like United States, Europe, that is changing. And I hope that we will have many things to discuss that we are learning. For instance, the fact that distant analysis can also be a useful way of doing our profession.
Kario, I want to thank you, and I don't think you think of it in these terms, but the way I introduced at the beginning the fathering function, you really demonstrated in your description of your thinking, your work, your life. You described decency, you described inspiration, you described learning and reading books, you described a loving example of loving analytic work. You described discovering new things and hope for the future. All these functions are evidence of your notion of the fathering function. So listening to you and feeling your presence and learning about how you think and live is really the best way to communicate to me and the audience listening what a fathering function is. And I want to thank you for that. It was a real experiential lesson.
I also want to thank you for the opportunity to discuss this so interesting and fascinating issues, and also for the opportunity of sharing these moments with you and with your listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If I may, I'd like to ask you to help us publicize our podcast by rating us on iTunes or simply sharing it with a friend. You can also visit our webpage, ipaoffthecouch.org, where you can both subscribe and also add your comments. I'd also like to acknowledge the lovely rendition of Beethoven's Opus 18th String Quartet by the Allegri String Quartet on the Vivat label.